If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This show is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Will drones become the new farmers?
Is it possible to hack a tractor?
Is high-tech farming more sustainable?
This is For Tech's Sake, a co-production from Silicon Republic and the Headstuff Podcast Network. We're your hosts, Jenny Darmody.
And Elaine Burke.
And Elaine, I have a question for you.
Okay, hit me.
Why did the chicken cross the road?
No. Why?
To get to the chicken cluck translator on the other side.
Oh dear God. What is this?
It's my favourite dad joke.
Is it?
No, I made
What's
it up.
What's happening?
I made it up. This is taking a turn.
Okay, wait. But is this real? It's chicken cluck translator?
Kind of, potentially. It's my fun way of saying that we're having some fun at farms today and talking about agri-tech. And so earlier this year, Japanese researchers said they used AI to try and translate the noises of clucking chickens and learn whether they're excited or hungry or scared. It is worth noting that this study has yet to be peer reviewed, but it's not the, is it the wildest thing you've heard in a while? Or is there?
It is. I mean, it's been a wild week for news, as you well know.
Yeah.
But this kind of takes the biscuit. They're kind of like Dr. Dolittling with the chickens.
Yeah, they're trying to test like emotional levels and stuff to, you know, help with animal health.
Okay.
As I said, it's a very, very recent study. I think it was September of this year and it's still awaiting peer review, which is, you know, a real test as to how strongly a study holds up. You know, it's reviewed by peers and strongly critically analysed and things like that. But a similar, slightly older study has taken place with results published in a peer review journal. So in 2022, researchers led by the University of Copenhagen, the ETH Zurich and France's National Research Institute for Agriculture, Food and Environment said they'd created an algorithm to help understand the emotions of pigs. So algorithms checking on animal emotions, not the newest thing in the world for farming.
Okay. I feel like knowing more about pigs or chickens' emotions is only going to lead me faster down the road to vegetarianism, which is not necessarily a bad thing. You found some strange applications of technology in agriculture. There's also lots of practical ways.
Yes.
That things like algorithms, data analytics and AI are being used in farming. And we don't even have to look very far for examples because, surprise, surprise, Ireland has a massive agri-tech sector.
I mean, I'm shocked.
I, for one, gasp at this knowledge. But yeah, no, it's no surprise because we've got an incredible agriculture sector. So agri-tech is just a nice follow-on from that. And there's a healthy tech sector as well. So just merge those two together and you get things like this happening. So just two examples. We've got Dairy Robotics, which is a Kildare-based startup. They design and manufacture animal health monitoring devices. Not checking in on the emotional side, I don't believe, but still doing cool stuff. And they work on robotics as well to automate the process of milking cows. Again, not necessarily a new thing. Hand milking has not been done for a long time, I'd imagine. But looking at optimizing those processes with more automation. And there's a UCD spin-out called Pruvi, which we spoke about in our drones episode as well. And they're using drones and computer vision to support crop monitoring.
Yeah, it's really interesting stuff. I really wanted to grab you with the emotional thing.
But you kind of scared me.
I know. I'm sorry. And you know, we're leaning more into the automation and robotics, as you said. I will see you at Dairy Robotics and a Pruvi. And I will raise you a Cotter Agritech set up by two brothers in Limerick. Not the Collison brothers, other brothers.
Are they the Cotter brothers?
They're the Cotter brothers.
Close enough. So, yeah.
So set up by two brothers in Limerick, which uses patented hardware and software to help farmers to precisely target animals with anti-parasitic drugs instead of blanket treatment for an entire flock or herd. And then there's also Micron Agritech, another startup developed a parasite testing kit for animals that allows vets to conduct on-site testing using their mobile phones.
Yeah, so
really interesting stuff.
That's
there.
Just like a small handful of examples, but like there's countless agritech innovations happening in Ireland and further afield.
Well,
there's my dad joke for today.
Yeah, there you go.
But they're doing all sorts to advance agriculture, and those examples that we talked about, they're focused on things like reducing chemicals, improving the milking process, crop management, supporting farming in lots of ways. And a lot of it uses sensors, automated machinery, smartphones, and Internet of Things devices. So things that are not typically connected to the internet, but they're, you know, items that become connected to the internet and maybe get involved in what's called edge computing, which is when the processing is happening on device as opposed to having to connect to a server all the time. That's something you have to consider when you're on a farm. And all this is kind of giving us something that I suppose you might call, in air quotes, smart farming.
Yeah. And a lot of it kind of can bring about more sustainable farming practices as well, which is extremely important. Like a lot of it's also called precision farming as well, which is, you know, using all of this tech to create incredibly accurate data on which to base farming decisions, basically. It means better use of resources. It means less waste. It can save on water use, and precision pesticide application methods, for example, can significantly reduce spray falling outside of areas that need to be treated and things like that. And then there's also the fact that a lot of this could be done by semi-autonomous tractors.
Oh yeah, the tractors aren't even safe. Even they're getting a tech makeover.
Yes. We have mentioned this before. We mentioned it in a season one episode, but for a quick recap for our listeners, John Deere, the well-known tractor manufacturer, is making its tractors so high-tech that farmers who were once able to repair their own vehicle now had to take it into a licensed technician. This is until a hacker essentially jailbroke a tractor to show other farmers how to bypass those digital locks and allow them to modify and repair their own tractor the way they used to be able to with analog devices.
Good job.
Good job,
that hacker.
Yeah.
Farmer hacker. But like this is why I said kind of smart with air quotes earlier, because like smart doesn't mean smart. It means internet connected in that usage of the word, because it doesn't mean it's clever. And anyone developing this area would really want to get down and dirty on a farm and understand the realities of that user environment and the user needs before they start trying to apply a technology here. Because adding tech doesn't automatically make a system better. Mm-hmm. The practice of better, more sustainable, environmentally friendly farming, that needs to be led by agricultural experts. Yeah. And then the tech can follow where it's applicable to support that. And agritech developers, that's what they need to think of. And they need to think long term as well, because like we were talking there about repair and replacement and maintenance, like these items need to be hardy and durable if they're going to be suitable for farm work. And I would argue that they definitely have to be repairable.
Yeah.
And if that repair and maintenance work is going to require like a skills education, like that needs to be taught out as well. Like it needs to be something that can be learned. Not that you need a specialist to come and visit or a computer science degree to fix your tractor when it's something that you could do before with like skills that you'd already built up over time. Like this should be about enabling more efficient and sustainable farming practice through accessible tech, not creating a digital divide.
There's also a significant cost issue potentially to this tech as well, because like high tech stuff ain't cheap.
No.
Never has been. And this can make it harder for, you know, smaller, more family run farms to kind of keep up with that automation and the level of tech that they may need. And add to that the cost of, as you said, we're back to maintenance and repairs for these devices. The costs just keep rising. So that is a significant challenge to bringing that tech into the farms.
Yeah. And it's like something else we've discussed, I think, in some of the one of the AI episodes, or one of the episodes that wasn't about AI, but we ended up talking about AI. But like this issue of like dependence on technology, its potential to disrupt conventional methods can also like add productivity and efficiency, but can result in this loss of knowledge because you're not cultivating those skills over time. You're relying on a product to do it for you instead. And those skills that are handed down through generations, like we don't want to see that stuff lost.
Yeah.
Like that really clever stuff. And a lot of farming is like stuff like that. And it's like knowing like seasons are seasons, but like the seasons will all be different. And you hear about people like nomad farmers and indigenous farmers and stuff like that. Like the knowledge that they know about climate change is actually informed by just working the land and stuff like that. So there's a lot of like tacit knowledge that people who work in these areas will have, and you don't want to see that lost.
Yeah, exactly. So as always, it seems to be about striking that balance between like good tech that helps farmers and then tech for tech's sake. Roll credits.
You said the name of the thing in the thing.
Yeah, roll credits. So to figure out where that balance is exactly, I think it's time that we bring in an expert. Padraig Hennessy is CEO of Terra Nutritech, another agritech startup which is developing technology for precision liquid delivery of nutritional supplements for animals. He is also chair of AgTech Ireland, an industry group which aims to represent and drive Ireland's thriving agtech sector. So Padraig, firstly, can you tell us a little bit about the background behind Terra Nutritech and how it started?
So Terra Nutritech, the simplest way to describe what we do is we've developed an espresso machine to put Barocca for cows into water. Anyone from a non-ag background can understand that. It took me years to hone that to be able to describe what we do. So our journey began about 10 years ago, and that was from farmers asking us, had we a better way to put liquid supplements into the water? It was one area in farming that hadn't actually changed in a generation. It was still being done the same way as it was done in the 60s and the 70s. So we started looking at the available technology around the world to see, could we bring any of that technology into Ireland and could we improve the process that was happening here? And we just couldn't find any technology good enough out there. We launched with technology that I'll say half done the job, just to see, was there a real market? Was there a real demand? And it very quickly caught on. In the first 4 years of the business, we doubled the size of our business each and every year.
And let's talk about the agriculture sector in general and about those challenges facing farmers and, you know, where the tech adoption kind of comes in to face mm-hmm. those challenges in general.
One of the biggest challenges really for farming is the fluctuation in commodity prices. In 2022, milk prices were at an all-time high and farmers made good money in 2022. 23 was much, much lower. So this year, farmers are barely breaking even. So it's really, really difficult trying to manage cash flow. And that has a real big knock-on effect with technology adoption. Last year, there was a lot of technology adopted. This year, not as much. And even from a technology company, trying to manage that fluctuations in demand is really, really difficult. Farmers at the moment as well, they're under attack from all sides. Both from legislation, but also from like mainstream media and from consumers, that they feel they're becoming the scapegoat for everything climate related. And the reality is farming can't ever be put into the same bucket as air travel or as data centres. We can all live without going on holiday abroad. We wouldn't like it, but we could live with it. We could all live without 7 different copies of every photo we have in data centres. We all can't live without breakfast, lunch and dinner. You know, farmers actually produce the food to keep us alive, literally. So they're really a separate entity as all of the other emitters. They have to improve, absolutely, and they have to get better. But from a farmer's psyche at the moment, it just seems to be under attack from every direction. And that's also having effect. There's a study out actually only today where 25% of farmers are actually feeling burnt out. And that's down to workload. And that's down to that attack, really, that I'm talking about. The workload side of things is really, really difficult now to get labour on farms. We're at full employment effectively in the economy. So there's nicer jobs for people to do. The youth, because they're seeing farmers kind of being pushed to the brink, they don't really want to go into farming anymore. And that's putting pressure on everybody else in the farming sector. And then changing practices as well. You know, from a legislation point of view, practices are slowly changing. And the average age of farmers being, in the late 50s, I think, or early 60s even now, it's really difficult for that generation to change practices easily. And especially then to adopt technology. Because farmers can't work harder. They're going to have to work smarter. Because farming is going to change hugely over the next 5 years. It has to hit the first set of environmental targets. And that's only the first set, and then it'll be a second set and a third set. So in order to hit those, it isn't about working harder, it's about adopting technologies. And that's going to be a real challenge going forward for especially the older generation is adopting these technologies, because many, they're really only periphery users of technology. You know, they it might be WhatsApp, it might be a smartphone and maybe 3 or 4 apps that they regularly use, mm-hmm. but that's about it.
I really appreciate you bringing that voice to it as well, because there is sometimes this attitude that farmers aren't innovative, and I just think that's so unfair. Like, there's so many different things that farmers are looking into doing. I've heard of so many things that are also just into the agricultural science side of things, not just in the tech, like looking at how land use is managed and stuff like that. There's lots of stuff going on, and there's lots of consideration for how do we do this more sustainably, how do we do this better. And I think that is definitely a really fair point to make. And then there's going to be labour shortages and stuff like that. So they may need to look at more tech assistance to work on the farm, to do the work of the people that they used to have, but they can't get anymore. So obviously there's going to be this tech adoption, but also that's another point that you've made there. I think there's an assumption when maybe there's talk and there's media hype around technology and how it might be able to be adopted and used to improve things, that all you need to do is just build it and it will work and people will be able to use it day one and everything will be fine. And why isn't it happening already? Why aren't things better already? But it's completely discounting the idea that you need to teach people how to use the technology. It needs to be culturally embedded with them to work alongside it. And that's a whole job of work that I don't think is addressed.
It's not being addressed at all at the moment. There's no teaching of around technology happening in Ireland at the moment at all. You know, and that's going to be a big challenge going forward.
And is there anything, like, with your experience, like you've even built your business around being closer to the farmers, and you yourself have a farming background as well and a tech background, so you're just like really perfectly positioned here. Is there anything that you feel is kind of becoming a bit like a lot of the agritech space is quite lush right now? You know, there's like lots of active investment happening in agritech, but do you think some of that activity might be just missing what could be the most effective stuff in farming, and some of it might be tech for tech's sake?
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of tech for tech's sake. I speak to you know, startups regularly, and my first question is, does the problem exist? Does this problem that you've identified, does it actually exist? And then the really important question is question number two: are farmers willing to pay to solve that problem? And frequently the answer is no to that. So when you have to go and educate your potential clients about the problem and then educate them why they should pay to solve that problem, that's a long process. No VC is going to go with you on that journey. You know, VCs are going to be short term. And I know, because in my own business, Terra Nutritech, it's effectively what we've done. We've kind of introduced a new technology and a new way of doing things. And it's slow. It's farm by farm by farm. You know, there's no silver bullet where you're just going to get mass adoption. You can get really, really good, loyal customers when you do things right. But you're never going to go from, you know, you're never going to 10x growth in a year, ever. It's never going to happen with ag tech, really. Mm. And a lot of VCs are actually starting to see that now. And that's why they're starting to just pull back a small bit from ag tech, because they're seeing the life cycle of products just isn't the same. It's a much, much slower adoption rate.
It's so unfortunate, because it sounds like, this sounds like good business. Like, you had 4x growth. Like, why isn't that good enough? And like, you might have slow growth, but you have very loyal customers. Like, that sounds like sustainable business. This sounds really good and promising, but it's just unfortunate that the way the VC world is now, it's more about like immediate growth.
Short term.
Exactly. But like, are there any things, like, you've obviously, you identified something that there was a need, you worked with farmers to improve it, you continue to work with them to make sure that you're servicing them. Are there other areas that you think that you'd like to see startups activate in, that you identified that there's definitely something that needs to be done here and a tech solution may be possible?
If I'd identified it, I'd set up my own business.
don't give it all away here.
One area, I think, I'm not sure startups are going to be able to fit into this gap, is methane emissions, because of the body of research that's needed around any sort of additive that can solve methane emissions. I don't think is startup friendly, because just the amount of regulatory work that would need to be done would eat up too much cash and run out of runway. Data is the big challenge. On every farm, or many farms you go into, there's anywhere from 3 to 10, I'll call them, data gathering devices, you know, from farm management software to milk recording to mineral systems to whatever it is. None of them speak to each other at the moment. Mm. So there's a big data issue there, that and first challenge is, who owns the data? I'd always be a big advocate of, farmers need to own the data. There's an education piece around that. I've had farmers saying to me, well, my data is really valuable, and when I have to break the news that it's not actually valuable, any individual farmer's data is never going to be valuable. The value that they can derive from that is, if we can get data sets together, we can give them really good insights to what's happening on farm, and they can make their own farm more productive and more profitable. That's where the real value is in this. But we need to be able to house all of this data in my opinion, some sort of independent, not-for-profit organization. And those conversations are only just beginning on how that happens. And then you need your proper protocols in place to be able to you know, get data in there and take data out, and GDPR and all the rest. And it's a whole minefield. That's those conversations are just beginning, but I think there could be huge value derived from that over the next kind of 3 or 4 or 5 years.
And there's some challenges that you mentioned there for like the wider kind of agritech sector, and then there's challenges that you mentioned for, you know, farmers and their adoption of it. But, you know, have you noticed, is there any kind of difficulties when it comes to rolling the stuff out from the startup side, or is there any particular challenges, I suppose, that the agritech startup sector, you know, you mentioned the VCs, like there is a bit of a slower, there's a bit of a pullback at the moment. Are there other challenges around agritech startups?
The other challenge is, in general, your hardware is going to onto one of the most harsh environments where it can go onto. Like it's very difficult getting hardware onto farms.
Yeah.
To make sure it's installed right, used right. Then you have your communications piece. That's getting better, you know, with the likes of national broadband, which is way too slow in my opinion, to likes of Starlink and stuff now. There are various different options there. We use the mobile phone network. We've SIM cards that can work anywhere in the world. It'll connect to any one of the networks that are available. So, and that's probably 95% effective. There's still some farms that wouldn't have coverage, but it's getting quite good. Mm. It's the slow for startups as well. It's the slow rollout. It's the farm by farm piece. And you need your farmer to be an advocate, and then move to the next farm, and move to the next farm, move to the next farm. So it's waiting that process out to make sure that you're in positive cash flow quick enough. Mm. I was only speaking to a Canadian startup there recently, and they're 5 years in and they still don't have a product. Wow. Not many companies can survive that.
Mm.
You know, they've raised quite a lot of money and they're burning through it every single month. So it's something that I would always say to startups is be really aware of your cash position, because it's slow to turn around. When it does turn around, it's really sustainable business. If you get once you get your product offering right, once you're giving value, but it's slow.
Yeah, it's such a unique challenge as well to the agritech. Like all startups have certain challenges, but then there's very different ones for different industries.
Yeah.
Looking to the wider kind of agritech sector, are there any trends that you've kind of been noticing, like not just necessarily in Ireland but globally, like are there particular problems, like we talked about, you know, is there anything that maybe needs attention, and you mentioned that, but is there anything that's getting a lot of attention, like is there a lot of specifics towards say robotics or towards automation or something?
Yeah, automation definitely. The challenges, so I'd be on a lot of farms around Europe, and I'd be talking to farms in North America and South America and stuff. Everyone has the same challenges. Labor is the big, big issue on all farms. So that leads itself into automation. From the sustainability side, Europe is years ahead, I think, of anywhere else. Like South America, they're not interested in sustainability. It's not going to pay any bills, so they're not even talking about it. Potentially, the only in the likes of South America, for example, they're looking at water and making sure there's no water wastage. But that's more from a commercial point of view rather than a sustainability point of view. And there's a difference there. They might both overlap. So it's labour, in my mind, is the big, big one. The sustainability side, like we have to hit targets. But there's also a food security point of view. There was only a study out there at the weekend saying that to feed the increase in world population by 2030, a land base the size of Brazil is going to be needed. That's not going to magically appear. Yeah. So farming needs to be better, needs to be more productive and do less with more. That means Europe is still going to have to put out food. Like we have a moral imperative to continue exporting food. Like we export a lot of food in Europe in general to the Middle East and to Africa. If they don't buy the food from Europe, they're going to have to buy it somewhere else. And it's going to go to the likes of South America, where it's going to be a hell of a lot more unsustainable the way it's produced. More rainforest will be cut down if there's demand there. So we should be doing things to the best of our ability here, and also looking at in a more holistic way, I suppose, from a worldview, not just our own countries or Europe's view.
That was really great to hear from Padraig, particularly around that whole balance between, you know, how farming is working at the moment and like that sustainability piece, because I really feel like like you said, you know, farmers are kind of the people that are in the media at the moment about sustainability, and how tech can help that is really interesting, but also that, you know, highlighting that they are thinking about these things as much as they can.
Yeah, and he's realistic on the whole, like, you know, tech's not this silver bullet that solves everything. Like, it's good farming practice, it's good agriculture practice, it's modernising your approach, it's learning from new research and all those kind of things. And, like, I do think that all farmers get tired with this horrible brush about that stuff, as if they're not innovators, as if they're not people who learn and grow with the times. Like, yeah, I'm sure there's some farmers like that, the same way there's some people like that in every aspect of every industry. And it's just like, why do people make these assumptions? And again, not all people make those assumptions, but there is like a contingent there, and definitely a narrative there where farmers aren't doing enough. And I do feel like the motivations of selling that narrative is to downplay the, you know, that whole fossil fuel industry and those one percenters who actually contribute something like 60% of emissions, was one of the most recent reports. 1% of people in the world, 60% of emissions. Like, that's the billionaires, guys. Like, they don't want you to, they want you to talk about the farmers.
Yeah. No, it's the farmers.
Because they
want
to have their private jets.
Yeah.
And like, we're all, no one's going to be able to do sustainability 100% perfectly. Mm. Certainly not from day one. Like, we're all on a learning curve here. And like, we do need to learn quickly. We are running out of time. That's fact. And I do fully agree with that. But like, you know, we can't turn on each other because of this. And it's a real case of, you know, turning the masses against each other so that the elites get away with all sorts in this respect. Because you do get people getting thick with someone because they still have dairy or they have red meat and stuff like that. But like, some people may choose to continue eating burgers. Some people may continue to choose to take holidays that involve air flight.
Yep.
Like, people are still going to do things that they derive pleasure from. Like, I just think we could all do it maybe being a bit more thoughtful about that. Absolutely. And thinking about our carbon footprints and our impact on the environment in everything that we do, but not to the point that we can't leave the house out of the stress and anxiety of doing that. Like, that's also not healthy. And the people who aren't going to do that are the 1% who need to make the most significant changes here. Let's be completely frank about it.
Yeah. And there's so much amazing tech in the industry as well that we've talked about, some amazing startups, some great stuff that's happening. But I feel like as well, when this stuff comes out and it looks amazing, it's like, oh, this is going to solve so many problems on farms and X, Y, and Z and stuff. And then you're like, oh, great. Like, every farm should do that. Done. That's the end. That's the problem solved. And you forget how many other hurdles there are to go over that. So even Padraig talking about like that, like going one farm at a time, like it's a much slower adoption process. Like, you have to allow for cost, for accessibility, for that education piece that seems to be missing, for, you know, adoption and bringing people on a journey. And I feel like all that stuff is kind of left out. Like, the whole ecosystem. Like, you can't just be like, oh, just like sell this product to all of the farms and then we're done. Great job. Why aren't they doing that? Why aren't you doing that already? Why isn't your farm better?
Like, and that takes a huge concerted effort. Like, one startup with a good idea isn't going to be able to achieve that alone.
Yeah.
And the VC funding, there's a gap and a problem there as well. So what you need to actually happen is, like, for real change, you know, systemic change, which is the change that we know we need to affect here. Like, entire, like, groups and lobbyists and industries need to, and government agencies and stuff need to be behind this. And we talked a bit about it, it'll be in the bonus episode, about like the likes of Chagas and stuff like that are a bit behind on this whole education side of things, and they need to catch up. Because a startup can go farm by farm to try and sell their product and educate them, but they're only going to be able to achieve so much. Most startups are teams of like 4 or 5 people, if even that. So, like, to get real, if a really good innovation is happening, we should be like, there should be government funding to make sure those innovations come to pass. There should be government support to make sure that the education is happening as well.
Yeah, that education is so important as well, because like you said, if they go to farm, that's one thing. But if those skills or awareness or technological like nuance is already there, they might not have the product. They probably still need training on that particular product. Like, you know, it's not going to make startups be able to sell out of a box all of a sudden, but it will make farmers who are not yet ready with analytics and data and things that they don't already have, they now have those skills or that knowledge to start to understand what they need or what they want. And it brings things along on a journey a bit faster. And it makes them look for things like Padraig said, someone being like, do you have an app for that?
Yeah.
Like even just that little piece, I think, is a really big deal.
And be able to challenge things, because like this can be a lucrative space, which means there can be actors who are selling stuff that maybe isn't as effective, maybe isn't as good, but will get the hype machine behind them. And if you aren't tech savvy enough to interrogate that, you might adopt something that ends up being useless, and it's cost you a lot of money to do that. So like for them to be informed users, just like we want all of our listeners to be informed users, like that's a good thing. But speaking of cultural systemic shifts, and something that we were talking about at the top of the podcast, the European Parliament has overwhelmingly backed draft legislation which will strengthen the rights of consumers to seek a repair of goods instead of a replacement. This is a huge moment for the right to repair movement. It's happening today as we're recording the pod. The vote happened and overwhelming support. I mean, it was 590 MEPs supported the measure and only 15 voted against.
Wow.
So like, they're fully on board with the right to repair. Now, this is for consumer stuff. We were talking about, you know, machinery and tractors.
Not the tractors, yes.
Earlier. But like, this is good. We need to, basically, this is about changing the global consumer mindset of disposability and going back to circular economies and thinking of repairing and maintaining things. Not just, oh, that's got a little chip in it, get a new one. We need to get rid of that whole aspect. And you know who's good at doing that? People who work with machinery are very appreciative of that kind of stuff. So the right to repair movement taking a good, big step today, I think, is a nice positive thing that has happened.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely great. And you know, and it is, there's a reason why we were celebrating the hacker who broke into the tractor, the John Deere tractor, because it is important that everybody's able to repair their goods if they want to. And as you said, that is a cultural thing. Like that is a massive disposable cultural thing that we have gotten ourselves into and are now trying to rectify. So like there's so many wider movements societally speaking that is another reason to not demonize things like farming is bad for the environment, and farming or be mean to the farmers. Like it does just, I think it's a psychological thing that people just want to take a box to be like, this is the bad thing, let's just focus on the bad thing.
I mean, because it's stressful, I think people want easy answers.
Yeah.
To, like, what is one of the most complex problems that as a society we'll ever face? Like, there are no easy answers.
It's a protective psychological thing that we do as humans, because we can't, we don't want to, it's too hard to unpick. So it's an easy psychological thing to, it's not a barrier to protect yourself, I suppose.
But before the people come for me, like, as I said at the top, I am working my way through not eating the meats and stuff like that. I'm not eating I don't think I'm going to eat the emotional pigs anymore. But I'm...
Have I ruined it? Is that what I did?
Well, it's all I'm going to think about now.
I'm sorry.
So that'll help. I'm all on a journey.
A dad joke at the start. All for a dad joke, and to really is all in. But I do think another thing that Padraig brought up, which I thought was so important, was the burnout on farms from farmers. Because, you know, a lot of the time we talk about tech and kind of bringing in tech for jobs, and there's always a lot of talk about robots taking over jobs and tech displacing jobs, and that absolutely happens, and that's a concern for lots of industries and lots of things. And you know, sometimes it displaces jobs that, you know, isn't the best work, but like, where do those workers go? There's way bigger conversations around that, but it's only ever seen as a bad thing. But you know, we talked about this in our robotics episode with Niamh Donnelly from Akara Robotics. Check that out if you haven't. Where if tech is adopted and used in an assistive way correctly in a labour short area such as care work or farming, as we've just discovered, it will reduce burnout. It will reduce people leaving the industry, you know, because burnout ends up being so cyclical as well. Because if an industry as a whole starts to get burnout because there aren't enough people, the people that are left aren't going to want to stay either, because it's burning them out, and then more people leave, and then the work gets worse, and it's harder to replace people if you can't get them in the first place.
Yeah, and it was interesting what Padraig said about the, you know, there's less of an attraction into the industry now, and I can see, like, you know, there's been a mad drive to get loads of young people to study computer science and get into computing, go into IT, go into all those kind of tech areas, and now all of a sudden it's like, well, now AI is going to do all that, so you're going to spend 4 years in a degree, and then it's going to be like, no, we don't actually need you, bye. So worth considering getting hands on, work in the environment, work in the outdoors. Like, I mean, make farming sexy again. I guess is what I'm saying.
That is the best slogan for this episode. Should it be our subject line?
It does sound nice, right?
Let's use tech to make farming sexy again.
Do do do.
Thank you for listening to this episode of For Tech's Sake, and thank you to Padraig Hennessy for sharing his insights with us. You can find out more about Terra Nutritech and the other agri-tech startups we mentioned on siliconrepublic.com, and we'll share some starter links in the show notes.
For Tech's Sake is a co-production from Silicon Republic and the Head Stuff Podcast Network. Follow us at Silicon Republic and at For Tech's Sake Pod on your platform of choice, and please subscribe and share and let us know what you think. Thank you to Hilary Barry for production, Matt Mahan and Dali for our graphics, Claudia Grandes for her social media support, and all at the Head Stuff team.
Next week, we'll have a bonus episode featuring an extended interview with Padraig. This is exclusive for Head Stuff Plus community members, so do look into signing up. Otherwise, we'll be back to you in a fortnight.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Head Stuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.
If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Head Stuff Plus.